Okay, so the last cheetah we saw in terms of the authorship of Eov was It Never Happened. Right? And we talked about why you would say that, you know, the weirdness of the Satan double-daring God and things like that. Fine. So we were up to two lines from the bottom of Tetvav and Aleph. Rabbi Yochanan vi Rabbi Elazar Jamri Chavayu Eov me'ole golahaya. He returned from the Galut. Uveit midrasho b'Tveria. And he had a base medrash in Tveria. What? Yes. So the Gemara says, Meitve, is that true? You may show them she'eov misha shenech nizrol mitzrayim v'ad sheyatsu. Right, doesn't it say that the length of his life was from when the Jews went into Mitzrayim until he came out? He says, no, Ema Kim Mishah Shenichnu Yisrael Mitzrayim Va'ad Shah Sheyatsu. It just meant he lived for a long time, for 210 years, but not that he was in Mitzrayim. So don't worry. Okay, what do you think is behind the Shita that he came back from the Gola? What is behind it? Because note, that is one of the few that doesn't have a Pasuk, which means that it must be a logical argument. So what's the logical argument to say that he's from the people who come back from the Gola? What do you think? What? So, it's hard to figure out exactly why they would want it. My guess, as we've seen, yeah?
If he lived, like, what it says, doesn't mean he lived 210/400 years according to that?
Sure, however many years you think it is, fine. Rashi assumes here 210, but yeah.
Does that mean he was probably alive during the Korban, or no? Or was it extended?
Yeah, so I don't know, but I think Ezra's on the right track. Meaning, I think... Okay, so it's possible. Yeah, it's possible that he's saying that, you know, maybe these happened because of Galut. But I think Ezra might be on the right track. That part of it is that what's going on here? The Churban and Shivat Zion is a time when we know that the Jews are really, really asking about Schar Va'onesh. Right? They're really asking that, right? You think about it. At the beginning of the Churban, everyone's asking, right? This is like what all the Nevi'im are saying, is there is Schar Va'onesh, and yet it doesn't look that way, because when are things the best? Yeah, under Menashe, under the bad kings. And when are things bad? Under the good kings that inherit the bad times from their fathers. So Chizkiyahu inherits it from Achaz, right? And things like that. And then they go into Galut, and they're constantly struggling with, is this fair? So one thing they're struggling with is theodicy. Right? The second thing is, what are the people who come back from Galut struggling with? As is clear in Yeshayahu, meaning much earlier, but Yeshayahu already anticipates it. And what does Yeshayahu say? What are they going to be struggling with? Whether or not they still have a relationship with God. Right? Yeshayahu, famously in Perek Noan, says, you think you're divorced from God, but where's your get? Right? Meaning you're still obligated. No matter how bad things get, right, you still have a relationship with God. So those two questions, why do bad things happen? And the question of, even after bad things happen, does that mean that we're in a relationship with God and He's punishing us, or that God has given up on us and this is the end of the relationship? That speaks very much to this, because remember, what's the drama of Eov? It's not just theodicy, which is why do bad things happen. It's more specific. It's, right, what does Eov's wife challenge him to do? Curse God. I mean, curse God. It's not just about questioning God. It's, does this suffering make you want to give up on your relationship with God and challenge your relationship with God? Right? And that struggle is what the Jews are experiencing. So my guess is that that's what this is getting at. Now, it could be... Yotam, I brought the book for you. You're coming back?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. So the other possibility is maybe what Yosef is saying is maybe there's this belief that, like, the exilic period is worse. Like, God, it's a period of Hester Panim, so bad things happen in the world in a way they don't when God is revealed in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe that's also related. Oh, correct. I think it's a related factor. Now, it's interesting that he says it's at the time of Shivat Zion rather than the Churban, but it could mean, as Ezra notes, that whole period, meaning the good and the bad, basically that whole... it's also possible that it's focusing on Shivat Zion because that's when the Jews start to rebuild their relationship with God post the trauma and the questions of the Odyssey, which is the ending drama of Eov. Right? So it's possible that's also part of it. Okay. So then the Gemara says, Meitve, Shiva Nivim Nitnabul Umod Ha'olam, Ve'eluhain, Bil'am Ve'aviv, right? There were seven non-Jewish or non-Jewish prophets or prophets of the non-Jews. Bilam and his father. V'Iov. Eliphaz HaTimni. U'Bildad HaShuchi. V'Tzofar HaNa'amati. V'Elihu Ben Barkiel HaBuzi. Who are those people? This is really not a trick question. I mean, it is a trick question only because I know you don't know the answer, but it's really not a trick question. Yeah, Bilam, his father, and Eov, I know you know. Who are the other four? No, wrong. Eliphaz HaTimni, Bildad HaShuchi, Tzofar HaNa'amati, Ve'Elihu Ben Barkiel are the four people who are respondents to Eov in the book. So basically, this is three people plus four in the book of Eov. It's not that Eliphaz, it's the three friends of Eov and then the fourth not friend who also critiques him, which is Elihu. Do you know the book of Eov at all? In the book of Eov, it's Eov suffers, gets into fights with God, blah, 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 blah. His three friends go through rounds of debating with him. And then at the end, out of nowhere, someone who seems not to have been a friend of Eov is just tired of it. Elihu ben Barkel, and he just comes in and starts yelling at Eov, you, da, 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 da. No one even bothers responding to him. And then God comes out of the whirlwind, right? So that's basically the book of Eov. It's a very weird book.
I think that's essentially
something. So their names are Eliphaz HaTimni, Bildad HaShuchi, Tzofar HaNa'amati, and Elihu ben Barkiel. Habuzi. So that means that four of them are from Eov. So the Gemara says... don't you see that he's not Jewish? Now, why is that important? Because it sounds like if you think that it's about Shivat Zion, the only reason it would make sense for him to be put in Shivat Zion if it's he's Jewish and therefore experience whatever the experiences are of Galut and Shivat Zion. So, doesn't this show you he's a non-Jew, which would tell you that his history can't be based on Jewish history, right? That's essentially the argument going on here. Ulitaimech Eliyub and Barkel Lav Yisrael Aveva Ktiv Mishpachot Ram. Said, really? What about Elihu? Elihu seems to be Jewish. So he says, no, he was Jewish. No, maybe he really is not Jewish. He just was a prophet to the non-Jews. Now, if that's the case, what about Yonah? Yeah, so I don't know. Right? According to this line of the Gemara, I have no idea. I mean, what happened to Yonah? I don't know. I don't know. Fine. Atukulu nevi'im el ivne milumara olam. He says, but aren't there other Nevi'im that talk to the nation of the world? Presumably Yonah is still there. Says, Hatam Iker Nevi'at Ali Yisrael, Hacha Iker Nevi'at Ali Marolam. He said, those other ones, their main prophecy was still to Jews, even if they had prophecies to non-Jews, but these seven were primarily to non-Jews. You'll ask me about Yonah. Maybe he had other prophecies. He does appear elsewhere in Tanakh, not just there.
Yeah, he does appear.
Yes, I don't know. Maybe we just didn't record his Nevi'at. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Meitve chazid hayab umod ha'olam said, okay, but elsewhere it says he is a non-Jew. He's a righteous non-Jew. V'iyov shemo v'lo ba le'olam el kadei lekabel scharo. And he only came to this world to get reward. Hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu olav yisurin. God punished him, brought suffering for him. Hitchil mecharef megadev. He started cursing God. Kefal HaKadosh Baruch Hu scharo ba'al mazeh kadei letardo min ha'olam. And then God doubled his reward to make him, yes, not get Olam Haba. Now, this is a very negative view of Eov, right? So, until now, all these views assumed that whatever you held of Eov, he was probably good by the end, right? This one, the theology of Eov that he captures in, right? Most people read Eov as follows. Eov, tzaddik. Satan, double dares God, suffers. His friends say, you must be evil. He says, no, I'm really not evil. And then God says, no, Eov's really not evil. Eov finally says, you know what? I'm done being angry at God. I do tshuva. It's all great. That's how most people read the book of Eov. This shita says, no, this is how the book goes. Eov challenges God. His friends say, you're a terrible person. God says, you're wrong. He wasn't a terrible person, but he did challenge God. So you know what? You're right. He's a terrible person. Now, I'm going to end his suffering, but only so that I can destroy him in the world to come. That's a little bit of a weird read of the book of Eov. It's a little bit of a weird read. But the Gemara says that seems to be this shita. So you see that in its question of authorship and Eov, it also gets into what is the theology in the day of the book. So the Gemara says, Tanoihi, it's a machloket. Ditanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Eov, B'mei Shvot HaShoftim. There are yet other shitov. Eov was in the time of the Shoftim. Haya shenemar, hein atem kulchem chazitem, v'lama zehevel tehebalu. He said to them, why are you all saying hevel? Right? Narishkeit, vanity. And then it says, ezehu dor shekulo hevel, heve omer doro shoshvot hashoftim. The generation which complete vanity was the shoftim. Now, I'm going to guess that at some level, this line is more about an interpretation on the book of Shoftim than it is on Eov. I don't know, right? That really the whole point of this is that the time of the period of the Shoftim was terrible, but presumably there is a certain level here of intertextual interpretation between them. What that is, I don't know. Meaning, look, in a sense, Shoftim, the book of Shoftim is about the cycle of reward, punishment, reward, punishment, reward, punishment. So, in that sense, maybe what it's saying is, look, in Shoftim, there is a very clear schar va'onesh cycle, but it doesn't help. The fact that it's very clear doesn't help anyone do good. So Eov, who's like challenging theodicy, challenging the notion that there's a very clear reward-punishment schema in the world, right? In a sense, it's sort of inverse of Shoftim, right? Meaning his life is completely inscrutable, as opposed to their life, which is scrutable. That's a word, right? But they're opposites in the sense that they never learn their lesson. So maybe that's what it's getting at. Right, meaning maybe it's like, look, you know, in the end of the day, even when reward and punishment is clear, people still abandon God, and therefore, at some level, it's hard, right? You know, predictability doesn't necessarily help, right? So maybe that's part of it. You know, I'm not sure. I assume it's something like that. Okay, Rabbi Shua ben Karach Omer, Eov bimei Achashverosh haya. Yeah, so the actual proof here is beyond weird, which is Shene'emar v'lo nimtza nashim yafot kibnot Eov b'chol ha'aretz. Ezu dor shem b'akshu nod nashim yafot heve omer zedoro shel Achashverosh. The entire interpretive move here is, it says that Achashverosh's daughters, that Eov's daughters were really beautiful. What is the generation in which we most care about beautiful women? Achashverosh, where the entire story is about... What? What did you say? Okay. And the answer is Achashverosh. Yes?
Isn't that like the same time as Shiva Tzion?
Good. So Ezra points out, isn't that basically more or less the time of Shiva Tzion? So this is a huge machloket. Because Chazal think... This is one of the major machloket about Purim. Chazal think that when did Purim happen? Before Shivat Zion, meaning during the years of Galut, the 70 years. The Pshat, as Ibn Ezra notes, is that when did Purim happen? After. The question being, are the Jews here waiting to go back to Eretz Israel, or are they the Jews that refused to heed the call to go back to Yerushalayim and chose to assimilate, and that's why Purim happens. It's a very, very important question, but Chazal are presumably working in their chronology in which Purim happens in the time of the Galut. Even if this Shita holds at the time of Shiva Tzion, that would only bolster the notion that this is less a chronological machlokes as a thematic machlokes, right? Good. Why? So it could just be, you always have to be open to the possibility that nothing is, there's nothing more to the Agadata than meets the eye, which is, it's about beautiful women. Yay. It's possible. You know, in a sense, obviously, I think comparing it to Purim makes different sense, in the sense that Purim and the story of Achashverosh is like the paradigmatic, God is hidden, and therefore things at first glance don't make any sense. Now there, in the end of the day, we see God's hand in it, but, you know, it is the holiday that represents God being hidden, and God being hidden, remember, half of Eov is about why are bad things happening, and part of it is God really, right, is that questioning the relationship of God in a world of Hester Panim, in that sense, that is very plausible. So comparing it to Achashverosh, in that sense, maybe picking up on that theme, I don't know. I'll be honest that as much as I would like to go in that thematic direction, the Gemara itself supports the much more literal direction, which is that the reason that they thought it was in the time of Achashverosh is because of the beautiful women. Because the next line is, Ve'ema b'mei David, dichtiv v'yavakshu na'arayafa. If it's just about beautiful women, it might as well be in the time of David, because not only Achashverosh looked for the most beautiful women around, so did David when he was freezing cold. All he wanted was a beautiful woman to cuddle him. Right? That's actually how Shmuel. That's how Shmuel Bet starts. That's how Malachim Aleph starts. Right? Which is shocking. You know, people barely realize that, right? Like, yes, Malachim Aleph starts off that David is freezing, so they look for the most beautiful woman they can find to cuddle him. Yeah. All the things we don't... What?
That was weird talking
about. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's weird in it. Yeah. Right now I'm doing Avshalom with Meir. There's a lot in that book. It's really hard to teach a 7-year-old, okay? Like, I thought David Batsheva was bad, and then I'm like, oh, wait, no, I'm not in Tamar. That's a worse story. That's really hard. Right, really. Like, incest, brothers raping sisters. I mean, that's not an easy story to teach a 7-year-old, okay? It's just... I'm not really... I don't know. Now we're at Avshalom, okay. Which... You know, the beginning is he rebelled. When he then rapes all his father's concubines, there's a lot going on in this book that's really hard to deal with. Yeah.
Did David marry her or no? So in conclusion, David wasn't shomer nigiyah.
It's not totally clear what happened there. It's an interesting story. Okay.
So you don't
know. Fine. So then he says, but wait a second, if it's just... Now, I'll be honest, though, that since the Gemara does seem to play on the this specifically, it does really sound like the main issue for this Agadata is the fact that beautiful women are involved in the story. So either it's just a textual thing, or maybe I'm missing something, and the fact that Eov's daughters are beautiful is more central to this story. I don't know. I guess that's another possibility, which is maybe that... You know, sort of the beauty, the search for just beauty, and the vanity that it, you know, and the capriciousness that it implies. Maybe that is central to Eov, that Eov's... But that's problematic, because we're not guessing that Eov was a tzaddik. Eov, the book, tells you that Eov is, like, perfect. So to say that this is the Gemara hinting at maybe Eov is much more superficial... Maybe... I mean, maybe, right? Maybe he's superficial in that sense, right? Meaning he was a tzaddik, but in the end of the day, he was only, right, skin deep, as it were, right? Meaning he was in it when things were good, but, and that's exactly the Satzan's claim. I don't know. It's also possible, right, that the Jews' loyalty in Chazal's, actually, I have another idea. Maybe, right, in Chazal's idea, because the Jews found God when it was hard, that's when they re-accepted the Torah. right? That's like the Chazal version of it, right? Kimu v'kiblu, kimu mashi kiblu kfar. So maybe that's part of it also, right? That the that it's about that reacceptance that comes with Purim, right? I don't know, though in Eov it's a little bit weird, because Eov really does God reveals himself. Unlike in Purim, you know, he comes out of the whirlwind. So I don't know. Okay. So he says, nah, hatem b'chol v'l Yisrael hacha b'chol ha'aretz. David only looked for all beautiful Jewish women, but Achashverosh looked for all beautiful women everywhere. Thank you. Great. Okay. I don't know. Rabbi Natan Omer Eov b'mei malchut shvahaya. Shneemar v'tevel shvah v'tikoche. Okay, someone tell me what the heck happened there. It is in the time of the Queen of Sheba. Now that is weird on many levels. Why is that weird? So first of all, it's weird because what should it have said if it wanted to say the time of Malchut Shva? Yeah, thank you. It should have said Shlomo. It's sort of weird for the Gemara to identify the time of by Malchut Shva. So what does that indicate?
Something
about Malchut Shva. Very good. What about Malchut Shva? The Queen of Sheba. What? What? Ah, very good. So if I remember correctly, I heard this on a Leap Tag many years ago, that this pshat, I think it's compelling, is what Yosef said, is that the Chiddush of Eov is that, as the Gemara said before, it's a book towards the non-Jews. And here you have a tzaddik who, in pshat, is not Jewish, right, but represents all that is good in this world. Malchut Shva is that moment. Right? And we've talked about this before, but Shlomo HaMelech becomes the paradigm in Tanakh for what? Mashiach. Right? Whenever the Pesukim describe Mashiach, the Messianic era, it often invokes images from Shlomo. The wealth, the peace, right? That was true in the time of Shlomo. But one of the keys to the Messianic vision is, like Yeshayahu says, that all nations will come to Yerushalayim. The one moment in Tanakh where you really see that played out before the Messianic period is Malchut Shva's visit to Shlomo, where she says, aha, I see that you are wise. I see, right? And that moment is so captures the imagination that there are legends, so many legends, built off that story. The most important story that comes out of it, I have no idea whether it's true or not, but it's very important, which is, what is the most important story? I won't call it a legend because then I'm assuming it's not true, but the story that comes out of it. Is that Shlomo married her and they had a son and his name was Menlik. You're like, why is this important to me? Because the Ethiopian Jews claim to be descendants of Menlik. Yes, like they trace themselves back to Menlik. Right? To Malchut Shva. So, right, the imagery of Malchut Shva is actually like a messianic image of when non-Jews embrace the vision of Torah. And to have Eov, who is described with the same terminology as Avram Avinu, but he's, according to most Shitot, not Jewish, when saying it's Malchut Shva, what is it really saying? There was a time in history in which godliness was so universal that you could find an Eov, just like you could find a Malchut Shva amongst the nations of the world. So my guess is that this Shita is playing on that. Right? Not per se the fact that they're suffering and things like that, because what suffering is there in Malchut Shva? The world is peaceful. But rather the notion that no. It's about him being a non-Jew who reaches perfection. Right? And that sort of proto-messianic imagery comes from that moment when Malchut Shva comes to see the wisdom represented by Shlomo in Yerushalayim. Good. Very good, Yosef. I think that's right. V'chachamim omrim, Eov b'mei kazdimaya, shenemar Kazdim, Zamu Shlosha Rashim. So it's in the times of the Kazdim. So Rashi clarifies that means the times of Nebuchadnezzar. I tend to think that that's probably another way of saying, right, we talked before about it being Shivat Zion, so maybe that's the whole process, right, of rebuilding. This, I think, places it very much at, that's when people are, things are being destroyed, people are questioning God, time of Nebuchadnezzar, right? That seems to make sense. Vidina bat Yaakov Nasa. Now this is a fascinating shita. It's in the time of Yaakov, and Eov marries Dina. Wow, is that an interesting pshat? Where does he get that? K'tiv hacha k'darar achad nivalot tidabri. Hazam ki nivala sab Yisrael. It's a Rashi. It's a Gzeres Shava from Nivala. Why would you say this? Why in God's name would you say this? You could, right? Maybe. So I don't know. Meaning, it. So I think there's an interesting look. The Eov, the Dina story is at least part of it is a story of the bad that happens among non-Jews and a failed attempt to convert. Right? Meaning Shimon and Levi basically pretend that they want to spread the word to the nations, right? Bring them close. It's the opposite of Malchut Shva, right? Because they pretend that they want to spread the message of Bnei Yaakov, and then they kill everybody, right? But to have Eov marry Dina is to say, look, that was failed, but there is a potential successful vision, even though the Gemara is about to say, oh, he's Jewish, but I don't know how he's Jewish because he's not from Yaakov's family. Fine. Someone not from Yaakov's family, not from the originally Jewish, to join the family. Right? So he could be working on that line. You know, it's also true that the Dina story is, you know, another one of these stories where good people are suffering, so it's always possible that that's what's going on, right? That, look, Dina suffered and she was a good person, and so did Eov. So it's possible it's picking up on that. Match made in hell. Yeah, exactly. Right. Fine. And then he says, "V'kulu tani svirlu diyov miYisrael have all these shittot hold he was Jewish." Even though I don't know what Jewish means here, because a lot of it is pre-Jewish, and he's not from Yaakov's family, so I'm not really sure what all those shittot mean. Levar miYishomrim, except for the Yishomrim, the Isaka daitach mumen olam have bater the shachiv Moshe mishar yeshchin alov dikhamim. Because the problem is that after Moshe had davened that no non-Jew should ever be a prophet, and therefore, if he's before Moshe, then he can be not Jewish, but afterwards he can't. Because the Ha'amar Mar bikesh Moshe shlo tishar yeshchin alov dikhamim v'natan lo shnei mflino ani ve'amecha. Okay, and then the Gemara gets into talking about the generation of Eov, of how bad it was. But let's read through it quickly. If we have time, we'll get back to it. But I do want to look at the Yerushalmi before we do it. But let's just see what he says. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Doro Shel Eov Shatuv Bezima Haya. The generation of Eov was very immoral. Shenemar heinatem kulchem chazitem v'lama ze hevel ta'abalu, because he accused them of hevel. Uktiv shuvi shuvi ashulamit shuvi shuvi v'nech zebach. Fine. Eima b'nevua t'chsev chazon yishom en amatzim kol adam zev hevel ta'abalu lama li amar b'yochan mai t'chsev eima shodav shiftim. Okay, fine. I don't know. Now there are yet other shita. There's one very famous shita that doesn't make it into the Bavli, and that is, before we look at the Yerushalmi, but there's probably one very famous shita that you know of, that Eov is from when? The Gemara already mentioned it, but it actually rejected it. Right? The Gemara said, isn't he from the time of Mitzrayim? And then it said, no, it means he lived as long as Mitzrayim. But what does the Midrash say?
The whole thing that he
wanted to do. Yeah, very good. The Midrash that He is one of the three advisors of Paro. Then when Paro said, what do I do with the Jews? Yitro said, don't do anything to them, be good to them. So he kicked him out, and Yitro ended up being family of Moshe Rabbeinu. Bilam said, enslave them, so he was punished by being killed eventually. And Eov was silent, and therefore God said, you were silent when you shouldn't have been, I'm going to make you scream. Now presumably that midrash, what is the point of that midrash? What drives that midrashically? Yeah, very good. Is that midrash is denying what Eov itself says. That midrash cannot believe that the real answer to the story is God tortured Eov because the Satan double dared him. Right? That midrash is saying, I don't believe it. God doesn't give in to dares. There must be more to the story, and is giving you a backstory. Right? Meaning, yes, that is clearly what that midrash wants from my life. 100%. Yaakov is 100% right. Okay, let's look at the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi adds a few more positions. So let's just, I copied it for you here. This is the last one in the fifth parak of Sota. Eimatahai Eov, when was Eov? Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish b'shem ber kapara b'beim Avram Avinu. Haya, hadai dechdev isha haya be'eretz utz Eov shmo. He was in the time of Avraham. Now, that actually makes a lot of sense, not just because of utz, but because he sounds like Avraham. He's Yashar, Vatam, he follows God, right? The interesting thing is, that means that this midrash is positing the notion that Avram isn't alone in the world. Or, yeah, he's not even the best, right? He's not necessarily, and I will point out that there, this might actually be connected to another set of midrashim. Which set of midrashim? The set of midrashim that read the same double dare into Akedat Yitzchak. Remember those midrashim? Why did Akedat Yitzchak happen? So one of the midrashic traditions is what? Because Yishmael said to Yitzchak, I'm better than you because I was willing to go through my bris milah. Right? When I was 13 and you didn't even know what was happening to you. And Yitzchak said, aha, I'd give you my life. Oh, dare! Right? Also, what do other midrashim do? They read Eov into Avram. Why? Because, according to certain midrashim, the Satan keeps trying to stop him along the way. Right? Telling him, God didn't really mean it. What are you doing? God promised you. Right? So the God, and other famous midrashim, what does the Satan do? He turns into a river to stop him, right? So the Satan stops him. And yet a third midrashic tradition that may be connected to this is the Satan used the information to kill Sarah, right? Which means that Avram does a good thing and the Satan uses the shock to kill Sarah. And what does Avram do? Nothing. He doesn't challenge God, right? So it could be that this isn't just saying, oh yeah, right? It could be it's connecting to all those midrashic traditions that Avram was also challenged by the Satan and things happened unfair. But unlike Eov, who says, why is this happening? Avram, even though the Akedah is totally unfair and his wife dying is totally unfair and the Satan tries to stop him, unlike Eov, who ends up getting angry and etc., Avram doesn't. So it could be contrasting it, which is saying, look, there's a successful version, Avram, an unsuccessful version, and Yitzchak, and an unsuccessful version, which is Eov. So, right, so it could be that this midrashic tradition is connecting to those. Rabbi Abba Amar b'mei Avinu Yaakov Hayev Edina Haytav Ishto Had Dichtev Kedavrachan Hanivalo Tadabri. Point two, which we saw in the Bavli in the time of Yaakov, but he married Dina. Uchtev Ki Nevalas Av Yisrael. Rabbi Levi Amar b'shvei Ashvatim Haya, which we saw already. Right, we said, is it about the Shvatim? Is it about Yosef, the unfairness of Yosef? All of that, etc. Rabbi Yossi ben Chalaf to Amar, and this is the Midrash I mentioned, Biridatan Lemitzrayim Haya Uvaliatan Meit. It was the time of, right? Remember, this is what the Bavli rejected as pshat in that Midrash. Right, the Bavli said, didn't you say he lived the entire time they were in Mitzrayim? And he said, no, it means he lived 210 years. But the Yerushalmi says, no, it means he lived from when they went down to Egypt and he died when they left. Mashal Roesh, Shabbaz Ze'ev, and his Davig Litzono. Now, But then he gives a very weird mashal. What is the mashal? A wolf came and then he was attached to the tzon. So ma'asa he'emid tayash echad kignegdo. This is a very weird tradition, right? Basically, how do you save sheep from a wolf? You give them other prey to chase. So this tradition says, yes, the Jews were suffering, and how did God convince the Satan basically to let go of the Jews and save the Jews from Mitzrayim? He distracted him by tormenting Eov to distract Satan. Yaakov is like, that is the weirdest thing. Yes. Hi, Jews, Yarani, Levelo, Isham, Yaratani. Yeah, I honestly have no idea what that midrashic line. I don't know what that argument. I mean, sure, that sounds as capricious as Eov actually sounds, which is, I dare you. And God, this is making it more complicated, which is God tricked the Satan into daring him to distract him from the Jewish people, right? That's basically the argument that this midrash says, right? That don't think that the Satan, right? I mean, this midrash, I think, is trying to solve the problem, which is, how can God get goaded into a dare? What's the answer of this midrash? God tricked the Satan into daring him to distract him. It's like not blowing the shofar in every Rosh Hashanah. I don't know why it works, right? But it works, right? I don't know.
But isn't...
I don't know what to tell you.
Logically, how does he even line up? Doesn't Eo suffering happen?
I don't know. No, maybe he suffers towards the end. I don't know. Or in the middle, I don't. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea what this wants from me. I mean, I understand what it's doing. It's true. I think that the main point of this midrashic tradition is to explain how did Gavin get given to a dare. The answer is he didn't. He tricked the Satan into daring him. Right? I think that's what this midrash wants. I don't know if it makes it better. I honestly have no idea. The next one is the one that you know. Tani Rabbi Shmuel, Eov me avdi paray hayo umigdole pamal yishalo haya hidichtev hayare dvar Hashem vegomer uchtev be ish tam v'yashar elkin v'sar meira. He's actually one of the officers of Paro, and I assume this is connected to the other midrashic tradition. Now, it's possible that these are connected, meaning it makes as much sense as this makes theologically. It makes more sense that God tricked Eov into the Satan into daring him if Eov really did deserve it, because of the whole story in the Midrash that he stayed silent when the Jews suffered, right? All that together may be a very elaborate Midrashic way of explaining the bizarre theology of Eov. Maybe. I don't know if it makes it better, but I guess it. I sort of know where it might want to come from. I don't know. Woo! Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hudom, Rabbi Meshvot HaShoftim, Haya, time of Shoftim, Haidi, Dechtim, Enetim, Kulcham, Chadim, Alam, Zet, Tevel, Tabalu, Chazitim, Aysedori. The only thing it adds here is basically that he looks around and says, look how bad everybody else is, right? So the Yerushalmi seems to add a line that isn't the Bavli, which is that why would it be in the time of Shoftim? Because that would be what convinces Eov that it's unfair, right? Meaning, maybe Eov isn't perfect, but Eov says, God, look at everybody else. They're terrible. Why are you doing this to me and not them, right? That seems to be the Yerushalmi's version of it happened to be made Shoto Shoftim. Because what did they do? Shaynotlin me'aser begrano davat etnana kol grod daganan, etc. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Rishem Rabbi Yonatan b'me malchut shvaya, Shnemar v'tibol shvava tikochem. Rabbi Natan omer me'i kazdim haya, Shnemar kazdim zamu shlosha rashim. Rabbi Shua ben Karach omer v'shmei achashverosh haya, Shnemar v'akshu l'melech na'arot b'tilot tovot mareh. Uchdiv lo nimtza nashim yafot kivnot Eov. L'fum chen, Rabbi Yochanan lamad mimenu hilchot avel. No, sorry, I skipped the line. Rabbi Shua ben Levi Amrim Ole Gola Haya. He was from the Ole Gola. Riochan Amrim Ole Gola Haya, the Yisrael Haya. And now, the Yerushalmi in a very weird moment says, aha, why does it matter whether he was Jewish or not? whether or not you can use Eov to teach you Hilchot Avel. This is when things get very weird in the Gemara sometimes. Which is, aha, if it's Jewish, then what we learn from Eov will teach you how to properly be mitavel. The Fumchein, Rabbi Yochanan Lama, Mena Hilchot Avel, Vayakam Eov, Vayikrat Mi'ilo, and that's how we learn that you're supposed to do Kriya, standing up, Rehuda Ben Pazi, Rishem Riyochan, Mikan, Sha'avel, Tzarech Lekram, Umat. Now, I don't know which came first. Is it that once they think he's Jewish, they learn Hilchot Avel, or they were looking for a halachic place of Avel, so they decided midrashically that he was Jewish, so he could be a source? I have no idea. But what you see here is that the line between midrash and halacha, between agadah and halacha, is not always as fine as we would like it to be. Right? Because this complicated question of who is Eov apparently impacts the question of whether you can learn Hilchot Avelos from him. Tani Rabbi Chiya, Hayali ba'olami goy echad tzadik, v'natati lo scharu patarti me'olami. I had one good tzadik in the world, I gave him all of his schar in the world, and then I got rid of him, which we saw in the Bavli already. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish omer Eov lo haya v'lo atid lichyot. I honestly have no idea what this line means. Right? Yes, I know exactly. I don't know. Right? In the Bavli, this version is, it was a mashal, it never happened. In the Yerushalmi, it never happened, nor will it ever happen.
Does that mean that, like, you know, there will be a person named Eov?
That will go through this, so I don't know. I mean, I assume it means the same as the Bavli, that it's a mashal, but I don't know why exactly he says it'll never happen, unless it's like, nothing like this could ever happen, because it's crazy. Maybe that's what he's getting at. I don't know, but it's a very weird formulation. I assume. I mean, I assume it must be a theological claim, which this could never be. God doesn't get double dared. I assume, yes. He says different things. One place he says it's an Avram. One says it never happened. Ella hu haya v'yisurin lo hayu. So then he says next possibility is he did exist, but it's fiction about a real person named Eov, which honestly I don't know what compels anyone to do that, unless Eov was like a tzaddik person who suffered, and then, you know, we tell a backstory about it. I don't know. So why was it written alav? The answer for the Gemara itself is, if it was come to tell you how much of a tzaddik he was, right? It's basically, imagine that this would happen, he would have stood up to it. It never happened, but he would have stood up to it. And that's the entire point of this book, is to tell you that Eov really was a tzaddik, and therefore would have been able to handle really bad things. And then it continues by telling you, Darash Rabbi Kiva v'icharaf Elihu ben Barkiel, Abuzim Ishbach Adram, Elihu zeh Bil'am ben Barkiel. Unlike our Gemara, which said, isn't Elihu maybe Jewish, the Yerushalmi has a totally different position from Rabbi Kiva, which is, no, Elihu is Bil'am. Shebo lekalel et Yisrael uberechan. Now this is even weirder, because it means that one of the people who's standing up for God fought, like, ends up being the one who curses the Jews, which may just show you that, you know, indignantly standing up for God, that God is just, but not caring that by doing that you're making someone feel really bad because he's been through a lot, that doesn't lead to healthy religiosity. So, you know, you might believe in God, but, like, you're going to end up cursing the Jews because... or it's pointing out that Bilam and Eov are contemporaries, right? I don't know.
But, like, that would also make you say that, like, Bilam at the end of the day has a very, like...
from theology, which is twisted.
Which is really weird.
No, I think that is what it's saying. It's that Eliyahu sounds really from, because he says, how can you question God? You must be a Rasha. And the answer is, yeah, that's the type of person that, like, has no compassion, and his frumkeit ends up being, like... corrupted religious zealotry.
Also,
right? So I do think that that is what it's getting at. In who kfar kis alav amakom and later the kechimcha el Elihu ze Yitzchak ben Barkiel ben Sheber Choael. But Rabbi Elazar says that's crazy. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says this is the guy who stood up for God the most in the whole book, right? No, he is a tzaddik who God blessed. So The second she just says, that's crazy. No one that... So this might be an interesting machlokes, which is, can someone be, like, really, really from min adam lamakom and have no compassion on people who are suffering? Elazar ben Azariah says, yeah, you know, meaning he's really from, and, like, he has no compassion on Eov because Eov is challenging God, but he really is authentically from, right? And Rabbi Akiva is saying, no. If someone can turn to someone suffering whose kids just died and said, you shake it, you know, which is basically what he does, that guy might believe in God, right? He might even be a Navi, but, like, there's something fakrumped, as they would say about it, right? There's something wrong. That religiosity has something severely lacking in it. And that's the type of person who ended up cursing the Jews. I think it's actually a very profound machlokes, which is, can you basically be, you know, standing up for God but not having compassion on human beings? Right? Maybe yes, maybe no. Okay. So I do think that this, you know, 13-way machlokes about the authorship of Eov is a really interesting way to see the way the Chazal midrashically work and how they can contextualize different books of Tanakh and conceptualize it and deal with really complex things and share theological ideas between books and stories. Good. So we'll stop. We'll stop there. And you know, you did like a whole Amud in Bava Basra and a whole Amud in Sota Yerushalmi for it. So.